Hello and welcome to Lauren's SpacePod 2012 on the space, a new way to enjoy the arts free and online this summer. I'm Lauren Laverne. Step on board with me as I journey once more across the landscape of the UK-wide 2012 Festival and the Cultural Olympiad. We'll be flying high across friendly skies to encounter Shakespeare, Stockhausen and the longest media artwork in the world. Pod, set audio stream for my space monkey, John Holmes.
My mission this week was to go to Birmingham to seek out a dancing camel, a man with yellow paint on his head, hundreds of small camping stalls, dozens of lifeguards chairs where people with painted faces would sit and shout, and four helicopters flying over the city with four separate sections of a string quartet playing in them. And you know, as luck would have it, that's exactly what I found.
Phew. Pod, my airlock doors are open. I detect a visitor. Welcome, Simon Russell Beale, currently playing the lead role in Timon of Athens at the National Theatre. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much.
Thank you for being here. Timon of Athens, arguably not one of Shakespeare's greatest hits, Simon. How's it been going?
No, not really. It's a very, very odd play and very rarely performed, but it's proving to be a bit of an interesting journey.
Oh, excellent. Well, we'll be joining you for more of that in a little while. First, though, Pod, reconfigure monitor screens and set coordinates for the north of England. I need a data stream for Hadrian's Wall. Thank you, Pod. Let's see now. A defensive fortification built in Roman Britain, begun in AD 122 during the rule of Emperor Hadrian, built partly of stone with a centre of rubble and partly of turf upon a bed of cobbles. 73 miles from Wall's End in the east to Bowness on the Solway Firth to the west. It remains a potent symbol of Roman rule, which I guess provides yet another answer to the question, what have the Romans ever done for us? Pod, give me more. Ah, yes, thank you. I can see trace elements of activity involving hundreds of tethered balloons, internal LED lights and an art installation that becomes a line of pulsating colours which respond to messages sent across the wall. This must be connecting light, which explains, Pod, my incoming audio stream with one of its prime architects, Zach Lieberman, and his collaborator, Momo. Welcome, both of you. Hello there.
Hi.
Hi. Zach, I'll start with you first. Tell me how this project got started. What inspired it?
So we were invited to come out and see the wall and propose an art project that would span the entire length of the wall. And we had this image or this vision of balloons floating above the wall, the idea of a kind of wall above the wall floating, and with this notion that these balloons would light up and communicate with each other to present a kind of inverse of a wall, inverse of a border, the opposite of a border, something that doesn't divide people but actually brings people together, that is about communication.
Okay, so you've been visiting the site, I understand, since late last year in all kinds of weather. What were your initial impressions when you first got up there?
Well, it's beautiful. The landscape is stunning. And, you know, what's amazing about Hadrian's Wall is that it moves through so many different types of environments, from very rural, you know, farmland, very windswept plains to urban, you know, cuts through cities. And that's amazing. And that's one reason why people hike it and cherish it. To see it in all those contexts, that was exciting. And then also to see how people are interpreting, how people are taking the wall and responding to it. So, for example, there's a great museum in Carlisle called Tully House, which is about understanding the wall in a modern context. Yeah. What do walls mean? Why do societies build them? And why do they come down?
I understand that you ran tests for this project in New York as well. Momo, what was the reaction like there?
We getting help from two universities in New York. One is NYU and one is the school where Zach is teaching, the Parsons School of Arts. We got a lot of responses from the students to come out and help, and everyone's really, really excited.
So paint a bit of a picture for us of what we would actually see if we were there with you. The balloons are a bit like oversized beach balls. They've got LED, internal LED lights. How do the volunteers on the ground use them? What's the effect like?
So we're inviting the public to submit messages. And it's basically like writing a text message or a tweet or, you know, it's writing a short message. Yeah. But we're going to, create software. We've created software that once you submit your message, depending on where you're located, you'll see your message reflected in the light of the balloon that's in front of you. But then that will carry from balloon to balloon. So your message goes out directly where you are, but then it carries from balloon to balloon in either direction, and it's going to go the entire length of the wall. So your message is actually going to travel, 73 miles.
And has connection been the theme of the messages that you've received so far?
Oh, yeah. So we've created short prompts for people to respond to. And these prompts are about connection, and the things that people are writing are really, really beautiful.
Some people are saying that Connecting Light is the longest artwork in the world. Are they right?
Sounds very accurate.
It feels that way now that you've been organising it all.
Right. It also feels like, you know, the smoke signals from old time where they burn something into signal the next village, like hundreds of miles away.
Okay. Well, it sounds wonderful. We wish you the best of luck with it. Zach Lieberman, Momo, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And if you want to catch this artwork, of course, evenings are the best time. And the installation Connecting Light will be live from 8 p.m. on the 31st of August and the 1st of September. Go to connectinglight.info for more. Birmingham Next, Please Pod, and a 2012 festival project that's been widely interpreted as a once-in-a-lifetime event. It had a string quartet playing in four separate helicopters, a chorus and orchestra floating in midair, and a walk-on part for a camel. Set data stream, bring me Stockhausen's Mittwoch aus Licht, or Wednesday from Light, and Space Monkey, John Holmes.
Imagine eating an enormous quantity of cheese. Not just a bit of brie here and a lump of Leerdammer there, but a whole fridge full. In fact, not even a fridge full, but an entire cheese shop's worth of cheese in one sitting. And not just a cheese shop, but digesting a cheese factory and topping off your meal by sucking curd straight from a cow and then going to sleep, primed for the world's most mental cheese dream. Do that, and the feelings and images you might encounter are not dissimilar to experiencing something that's come out of the mind of Karlheinz Stockhausen. When Stockhausen died in 2007, he was arguably the world's most avant-garde composer. 5 years later, in a disused chemical factory in the Midlands, Birmingham Opera are staging his famously unstageable work, Wednesday from Light, in full, for the first time ever. Why was it thought unstageable? Because it's the product of a mad dream. Stockhausen had a dream involving a string quartet hovering above a city, so he wrote a section where each musician is playing in a separate helicopter and the music must be mixed to match the clatter of the blades. Then he had a dream about bees and lobbed them in as well. The result is a six-hour-long assault on the senses and the buttocks, given that for long stretches you sit on the floor, and the audience moves around vast spaces, sometimes lit, sometimes not, where to a series of discordant noises like a man hitting a piano with a cat. People wear twigs, escape from cloth bags while an old woman knits, or melt out of the dark attached to a balloon. And then a man pours a 5-litre can of yellow paint on his own head. No one does opera like Stockhausen. And that's just the first hour. We haven't even got to the helicopters yet. Being in the audience for a Stockhausen performance is like sleeping face down in your pillow. It's confusing and sort of suffocating, yet if you just immerse yourself in it, you'll soon drift off into his world and everything will be fine. I asked Suzanne Stevens, the director of the Stockhausen Foundation, why all this was happening in a factory just off the M6.
Many Stockhausen operas need a place outside of the conventional opera house because of the spatial nature of the music and of the musicians who are making the music. The space, the size, you can place the music in great dimensions. We used 98 loudspeakers, and the music is coming from everywhere.
So tell me a little bit about the background to the piece that's being performed here, because it's famously difficult for anyone to stage.
Well, he didn't set out to do it. It was just his vision that made it difficult. You know, when you're an avant-garde person, you don't think in terms of what's possible now. You just think of realizing the vision you have, a sound vision. Of course, he also had a visual image of what he wanted in his opera. So he didn't try to be difficult. He just ended up being that way because his ideas were so futuristic.
Tell me about the helicopters.
This is something which Stockhausen was also... I mean, he's had incredible visions, but just about tops the visions he had. In fact, he was so concerned about it himself, he didn't even talk with his best friends about it for a while.
Is it true was it from a dream?
Yes. He had a dream of actually floating above four helicopters, and he saw musicians in these helicopters. And we have the result of the helicopter string quartet, which is very beautiful music. It's not a gag. Many people think, oh, helicopters and so on and so forth. But he spent, when he performed it the first time, he spent a half a day with just the helicopters on the ground filtering the sounds so that the sounds would be interesting. And you hear the helicopter noise, but equally balanced with the strings. And he composed for the string players in a way that would mix with the rotor blades. So it's a very ingenious, beautiful chamber music piece. Very beautiful.
So it's a challenge, not just for the audience and the performers either, but for the technical crew who have to balance the harmonious sounds of cello and helicopter and make it work.
I'm Ian Dearden, and I'm looking after the live sound projection of the helicopters and the string quartet. We have to bring down three channels of audio from each helicopter, and we're bringing down the sound of the blades, the sound of the player's voice, and most importantly, the sound of the instrument. But you can imagine that any mic that's made live within the vicinity of a helicopter picks up the rotor blades anyway. So we've had to be quite specific in the kind of mic we use for the job. Four helicopters, a string quartet, beamed down into a room. It might sound bonkers, but I can tell you the score, which you can see on my mixing console now, has as many pages about how to do it as it does of music. Dozens of pages in English and German about how you might do this. I've worked on his music on many different occasions, including with him in the room. It's my first experience actually without him being here, and in fact in this piece I'm doing what he would normally do, so I am Stockhausen for this performance, you might say.
And then a dancing camel turned up. Don't ask. Forget that film Inception. This is the genuine article. The closest you'll come to wandering through someone else's dream while lunatic visions dance in their head. It's opera, it's art, it's utterly mental and thoroughly enjoyable. It surrounds you. Throw yourself into Stockhausen. You can't miss. This is John Holmes for Lauren's Space Pod in Someone Else's Dream.
Thank you, John. If you missed those performances, fear not, you can watch a recording of the rarely seen Helicopter String Quartet, along with a selection of films about Stockhausen, his life, music and influences, and a series of shorts filmed by people from Birmingham in response to his work. All that is available right here on The Space. Simon Russell-Beale, you are still with me in my shiny new space capsule. Thank you very much for remaining. So Stockhausen dreamed of flying helicopters and then, you know, eventually somebody was able to make it happen. Does that strike a bit of an artistic chord with you?
Actually, funny enough, I read about this opera in a history of music book about a year ago. Isn't that weird? So it suddenly appears, because I mean, I'd never thought I'd ever see this.
Live to see it.
It's striking a chord. I don't know. It's just a completely lunatic vision, isn't it? I don't know. I'd love to go and see it.
Well, I wondered, you know, thinking about your lead role in Timon at the moment, Timon of Athens at the National, do you think that directors and performers have a duty to update and adapt works to ensure that they remain relevant? Because, you know, there you are with an Athenian tragedy transposed onto, as we mentioned earlier, modern day London.
Yeah. I mean, it's an odd one, really, Timon. To answer your first question, yes, I do think we have a duty to make it sing again, you know, each time. But Time is a very odd one because it's an unfinished play. It's co-written. Shakespeare wrote it with somebody else. And they were obviously talking about the London of their day. They weren't really talking about Athens. So it just begged to be done now.
Exactly.
So in terms of relevance, in terms of making it sing for a new audience, then I think actually that was quite an easy question to answer, really.
Well, one of the things about the play as well is that because it's not one of the best known ones, you kind of go into to see it without any preconceptions. For most people, I would have thought it's not maybe not something you'll have seen adapted before. Was that the case
it's,
for
it's
you?
It's not Midsummer Night's Dream, is it?
Did you know it?
I'd read it, but I never thought. I don't really have a list of parts that I want to play, but I've never thought I'd actually play it. You know, and the weird thing, it being a sketch. I mean, you probably won't see another major production of this for another 25 years. I think the last one was David Suchet with Trevor Nunn about 25 years ago. So that's about the rate we go with Timons. We're a very rare breed.
Like Halley's Comet. Yes. Just comes around every now and then.
I saw David Suchet do his Long Day's Journey Tonight last week, and it was quite nice. It was a very rare club of Timons. But I think the great joy and excitement of the project is that you have to rewrite it. So you're given this chance to write a Shakespeare play.
And how did that feel? Is that exciting but intimidating too?
It's just odd, really. I mean, we had the complete work sitting on a desk in the rehearsal room, and if we felt we needed a bit of sort of knitting together of plot or whatever, then we'd sort of ransack the complete works. And we were quite strict at the time because we said, you know, we'll only use work from the same period as Timon was written in, so would it be consistent? By the end of it, we were going, oh, hell, there's a lovely line for As You Like It here. Let's put that in.
You're chucking bits in all over the show, like a Shakespeare cocktail. My goodness.
So.
I mean, there are some great lines in there. There are a few, not of mouth friends was one I found particularly satisfying. I thought, I'll use that at some point if I get the chance.
Okay, I mean, occasionally you get the proper Shakespearean crackers, you know. Yeah. I mean, you know, you can see him singing. I mean, the other interesting thing about Timon is where the hell his head was at this particular point, because it is, you say mouth friends, Get my lines right.
sorry, I'm here to prompt. It's fine. Sorry if you need it. But,
you know, where it is the most savage play he wrote about human beings. I mean, all human beings, not just financial people.
Well, this is it. I mean, this tale of this, you know, extremely profligate, wealthy guy who was warned against the better advice of his friends, you know, loses everything and is brought low in the most kind of literal way. And then kind of it's a tragedy. So, you know, were you worried that in some ways people coming to see this in the, you know, the modern setting that it is, we're in the middle of this kind of financial crisis. Are you worried that people are looking for a happy ending, that maybe they're not going to get out of the play?
Yes, they might. I mean, there's that old thing about, you know, theatre in times of crisis always tends to go happy.
It's going to be fine.
It's going to be great. Nope, not in this play. It really is pretty bleak. And you say it's a tragedy, but he doesn't have any of the... You know, Shakespeare always gives tragic heroes rather marvellous ends, you know.
They
die rather beautifully.
Yes.
He doesn't. He just walks off. He just says, I give up.
He just rejects humanity, yeah, which is almost worse.
And he's foul about women, as Shakespeare, unfortunately, very often is. You know, he's foul about women. He's foul about, everybody. I mean, everybody. The only thing I can cling to is the fact that time is wrong, that actually humanity's...
Well, he's surrounded by people who love him, who are trying to make it all right for him.
Well, this is what I didn't realise before I did the play. I always thought, oh, he's right, you know. Humankind is just going to hell in a... Well,
venal and awful and inconstant. Yeah.
But in fact, actually, the people he meets when he's at his lowest, three of them are very, very loving, kind people, which he rejects. And then you have to find a reason why that's the case. And actually, I think there's a psychological reason. He can't accept all that. He can't accept love.
And as an actor, you have to make the audience empathise with him, which, you know...
Well, that's the most difficult thing of all,
exactly.
Isn't it? Yes, because he's not a pleasant man.
Yeah, but it works, I have to say. I was rooting for you right in the middle of it. And of course, Shakespeare has been central to the 2012 festival more broadly, the Globe to Globe season at Shakespeare's Globe, which I'm sure you know about. 37 companies putting on every Shakespeare play in a different language. I mean, it's hugely ambitious, isn't it? Why is Shakespeare the global play, playwright?
I remember when people began to talk about this year, and it's been such an extraordinary year for all sorts of things. And, you know, the fact that London is, and England and Britain are showing their faces to the world. And there was just only one playwright. You know, when it comes down to it, there's only one. He's our greatest export. And full stop, I think.
Do you think that's his skill, or do you think it's part of the time? Because obviously, you know, as he was writing, we were beginning our empire. So we weren't just creating an empire. We were creating this kind of empire of ideas and sending them out into the world.
And, I mean, over the last sort of 50 years, people have been questioning whether he is actually good, you know, and whether it is a sort of construct of a type of imperial luck, that we happen to get an empire and he happened to be our major playwright. But I think I don't think he could have sustained that amount of interest if he wasn't actually good. And when Shakespeare's... When he's terrible, he's terrible. And I always say that to people, that, you know, he can be terrible.
Duff
line.
Don't want a playlist.
Don't want a playlist. Oh, I don't think there's anything... Actually, more Tame Me the Shrew, I think I could probably do that. I don't know. I'm not hugely fond of Romeo and Juliet. I hate they're terrible. But I know it's brilliant. I know Romeo and Juliet's brilliant. But I think, you know, when he's good, he is simply unsurpassable. And the more I do of... getting to the end of my career. The more I do of other playwrights, you suddenly realise, actually, he does... Tom Stoppard, to name drop, once said to me, he exercises all your muscles, doesn't he? And I think... That's absolutely true. He exercises all your muscles at his best, so as an actor. So I think he will, with any luck, if you can transfer that to an audience's interest, then great. Exercise their muscles as well.
You're going to be in the gym at the National for a while longer with Shakespeare, so we wish you the best with that.
Thank you very much,
Simon Russell-Peele. Timon of Athens is on till the 31st of November, playing in rep with The Last of the Housemans and The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night as part of the 2012 festival. See nationaltheatre.org.uk for details. And for more Shakespeare than you can shake a stick at, in performance and on video, there are highlights of Globe to Globe and the World Shakespeare Festival on The Space, where I've also been enjoying a taster of the York Mystery Plays and the Northern Stages season at the Edinburgh Fringe. Pod, I can detect an incoming analogue stream. Welcome critic, curator and filmmaker Igor Toranyalalich. Hello, Igor.
Hello.
You are here with a festival roundup, I understand.
Yeah, I am.
What have you got for us?
I was very lucky enough to see Mittwoch on Wednesday. It was as mad as it sounds.
Oh, really? OK. Well, I mean, yeah. I would imagine after that, anything else is going to be a disappointment. My goodness, I daren't ask you what's a priority booking for this week.
Yeah, it is a bit depressing because you sort of want everything to, you know, have helicopters or singing camels.
You'd be going, yeah, there's no camels or helicopters in this. It's rubbish.
Yeah, forget it. I'm not interested. Yeah, that kind of, I really felt like that.
You've been spoiled.
No, yeah, absolutely. This is what the Cultural Olympiad is doing. It's totally spoiling us. But the next night, so I was a bit worried. I was going to see an opera in concert that had great reviews when it was at the ENO, Peter Grimes, at the Proms. But it was brilliant, of course. I mean, there was Stuart Skelton in lead role, and he was just so moving, and in one of sort of Britain's greatest operas. So that was fantastic. And the Proms are just looking like they're going to get better and better till the end in a couple of weeks. I mean, next week is really the best run of concerts of the season so far.
Okay, so the Prom's looking good. What about this Unlimited season at the South Bank Centre? That seems exciting.
Yeah, it is. I mean, to be honest, I don't know anything about disabled arts. I don't think maybe a lot of us do. And in a way, this is the great thing about it. I mean, we have a chance to find out about a whole world of artists and performers that maybe not many of us have really paid much attention to.
All right, and the Unlimited season at the South Bank Centre in London is going to be on from the 30th of August, showcasing dance, art, music, comedy and theatre with work by deaf and disabled artists, including Matt Fraser, Sue Austin, Bobby Baker, Kandoko Dance Company and choreographer Claire Cunningham, who's going to be my guest when we take to the skies in the next edition of Lauren's Space Pod 2012. Igor, thank you very much. Now then, Pod, what's this? An antennae alert? Ah, yes, musical duo from Mali, Amadou and Mariam. They're part of the Africa Express, a train filled with dozens of emerging and world-famous musicians, including Baba Mal, Kano, The Noisettes, Tony Allen and Damon Albarn. Amadou and Mariam, Dugu Bardia. Full steam ahead. You can catch the Africa Express as it travels the UK playing shows in Middlesbrough, Glasgow, Cardiff, Bristol and London, a new town each day from the 3rd of September as part of the 2012 festival. Time now to end transmission pod, clear all incoming streams and prepare my space pod for immediate shutdown. Remember, all of the space is available online now at our website, thespace.org. And for more on the festival, go to london2012.com/festival. Till our next journey, when I'll be joined by Turner Prize winner Martin Creed. This is Lauren Laverne saying goodbye. Transmission over and out.